With a draft and a start of free agency just days away, we open up the mailbag to answer your questions about what off-the-radar prospects might be an option for Miami, P.J. Tucker's future with the Heat, and the chances of Pat Riley landing another whale, all that and more on today's draft edition of Locked On Heat.
I'm taking 10 blue notebooks with me to Malibu with my wife. Blue notebooks. Blue notebooks. Blue notebooks. 10 blue notebooks to Malibu. Blue notebooks. Blue notebooks. Blue notebooks. 10 blue notebooks to Malibu.
Life.
Hello, Heat Nation. It's a Wednesday edition of Locked On Heat, your daily podcast covering all things Miami Heat. However you may be listening or watching on YouTube, Odyssey, or in your favorite podcast app, thanks so much for making us your first listen every day. I'm David Ramil, and with me as always is my co-host, Wes Goldberg. One live NBA draft show is not enough for Locked On. Every show is going to be live on draft night, so join us 15 minutes after our pick over here at Locked On Heat on YouTube for the immediate reaction from your local expert. Subscribe now to Locked On Heat so you know when we go live. We haven't done this for a while with Miami's extended run in the playoffs, of course. We were covering games, and now with the draft just a few days away, we wanted to increase our coverage of what potential picks might be available to Miami. But free agency is just on the heels of that, so we wanted to open up the mailbag because you've got questions about what potential players might be able to land, who could be available via trade, and much, much more. But we'll start off our mailbag with some questions about the draft. And this first one comes in from Carlton, who asks, what are the chances the Heat select someone on Thursday, even if they buy a second-round pick after trading the first?
Yeah, I mean, you talk to people around the league, reports that have been coming out over the last few days, and they're all indicating the same thing, that the Heat are one of those teams that are expected to possibly trade this pick, in connection to some sort of larger deal to get back a high-level player or even an all-star. That said, I think the likelihood is pretty high that the Heat end up selecting somebody at 27 and probably get somebody even potentially in the second round, despite the fact that they don't have a second round pick. And I want to get to that in a minute. But they have the 27th pick. I think they're going to choose somebody. Now, whether or not that player is for the Heat or for another team, where if the Heat are picking for another team and then, you know, a month after the draft, they can actually turn around and flip that player in part of a larger deal. I think that seems to me to be the most likely outcome Thursday night, because even if they want to trade the 27th pick for some sort of star player, it makes more sense to select that player for the other team and then and then trade that player, so that way it unlocks trading the 2023 first round pick and then potentially other picks down the line. It just increases the flexibility. So and usually you don't really see other teams, even if that team isn't getting the 2023 first rounder in a deal, you don't really see other teams, you know, fighting over that kind of stipulation, because it doesn't really matter. It doesn't. The league year doesn't start in a month, and then after a month of choosing that player is then eligible to be traded. So I think that's what's going to happen. But there's other reports too. Like, a lot of people around the Heat also feel like they might just trade out of the pick altogether and not take anybody, where they could trade 27 for a future first rounder or maybe multiple second round picks down the line, so that rather that be, because that, you know, the big whale trade might not be available Thursday night. So rather than take a player, and it's sort of like a used car, right? As soon as you drive the car off the lot, it loses its value. Well, you know, if you're the Heat, maybe we trade that first round pick for a first round pick in the future, that great old mystery box that has so much trade value in the league these days. Well, let's, instead of using it and then driving that car off the lot, we could trade it, punt, like kind of kick that can down the road and maintain that asset that we otherwise wouldn't have. And so I could see that, but I just don't really think the Heat want to get into the game of you know, shoulda, woulda, coulda, maybe, like, maybe we need this asset in the future, all these hypotheticals. Because I do think, as we talked to Rafael Barlow on yesterday's show, this is a rather deep draft, and I think there will be a quality player available at 27, and I think that the Heat would be motivated to at least take that player.
Right. So, to answer Carlton's question, 100% chance that they'll select somebody. They're not going to trade the pick away because, as you said,
you got it at 100% value. I wouldn't go with 100%. Nothing's guaranteed these days. I see what you're saying.
They're going to make a pick. Whether they keep that pick is that's the other question. And again, to bring up your point about what Raphael said, there is so much talent, or the disparity between the 15th pick and, say, even the 45th pick isn't that wide. And we're seeing this more and more, especially with a team like Miami. They can afford to take a flyer on a guy that maybe is raw or isn't quite proven, as long as there is an elite work ethic, just some kind of verbal level, you know, recommendation from a coach or coaching staff that they trust, something like Frank Martin at the University of South Carolina, or of course, you know, over at Kentucky. You know, there's, you know, once they have an established pipeline of a player or, you know, a draft pick or something like that, they'll be willing to take a flyer on somebody that might be a second round pick, you know, knowing that they can bring them into camp and harness that skill so that they can maximize that and become an NBA player. So I think even if they wind up making a first round pick, I still think, you know, even if they trade that pick, they're still going to wind up selecting somebody else, a younger prospect that they can bring in. Now, again,
or somebody undrafted, right? Because we saw a lot, right? You know, as we know, absolutely, like a lot of these second rounders, if they don't want to sign two-way deals or whatever, their agents can maneuver their way out of the draft completely. And somebody that might have a second round grade could be available as an undrafted free agent.
They're bringing in a body. I mean, somebody. And I hate to say it so coldly.
No, but they'll bring in somebody to training camp at the very least just to give them a run, right? And we know that they're going to fill out their summer league program and then later potentially Sioux Falls with some of these undrafted guys. So even if you don't – if you're a Heat fan and you don't care about the draft or you don't even think that whoever that gets picked at 27 will ultimately be with the Heat on opening night, it's worth kind of getting into the weeds of this thing even a little bit, because somebody from this draft class, one way or the another – will end up within the Miami Heat program at some level, anywhere from summer league to the opening day, night roster on a two-way contract or something like that. And you look at the names that they've brought in. Like, we know that Christian Braun has been worked out. Jake LaRavia has been worked out. Blake Wesley out of Notre Dame has been worked out. Andrew Nembhard has been worked out by Miami. These are all guys with late first-round, early second-round grades. And then you go even further, somebody like Arkansas center Jalen Williams, who has some interesting things. Justin Lewis out of Marquette, Josh Minow out of Memphis. You go and Jabari Walker out of Colorado. I know we have a question about him later on. And John Butler out of FSU. Like, those are just a few of the names that we know have worked out for the Heat in the last few days. Those are guys with either like mid second, late second, or even undrafted grades that could ultimately find their way to Miami. And then you look at like the second round, what's available to them. What if the Heat trade the 27th pick, right, or agree to trade the player selected at 27, however you want to phrase it, but still have value one of these second-round guys? They could potentially buy their way into the second round, at the top end of the second round even, because a lot of those teams are expected to be selling off their picks. And Miami has almost $6 million in cash assets to use, and this is kind of where you use that. That is in trades and potentially in draft picks. You look down, like, Orlando is at 32 and 35. They could sell off one of those picks. Portland at 36 could sell off that pick. Sacramento at 37. The Spurs at 38. Mm-hmm. The Knicks at 42. The Clippers at 43. Minnesota has 40, 48, and 50. Right. All those teams could presumably sell that pick, and the Heat could find their way back into the draft to get somebody that maybe not a lot of other people are very high on.
I'd look at the Knicks pick in particular just because they're trying to clear as much cap space as possible to sign a guy like Jalen Brunson. So they won't be able to afford having a second round pick as an option on the roster. That's kind of money that they just don't need to expend on any one player like that. So I would see that as
and
a
the
likely
Clippers
trade
at scenario. 43, I think, is a good one, too.
Yeah. So we'll see how that pans out. But you mentioned Jabari Walker before. We've gotten a lot of comments from a few different viewers over on YouTube and via Twitter about Walker, the forward out of Colorado. What's your take overall on his game and his fit in Miami?
Sort of like a poor man's Irv Jones. You know what I mean? Like, he's 6'8", 7-foot wingspan, 200 pounds, looks the part of the NBA.
Isn't Herb Jones a poor man's Herb Jones?
There will be no disparaging of Herb Jones on this podcast, David. But, but to your point, like, Herb Jones is just what? Like, a nice role player, like a nice find in the second round last year for New Orleans. And Jabari Walker is, I think, a lot of teams and maybe even a lot of fans who are commenting kind of trying to find the next Herb Jones. And there's some stuff to like the on-ball defense is good. The help defense is, you know, he's acute. He's aware on that end. There's some upside with the shot because of the high release and the things that, you know, his ability to just get that shot off. But he's not a dynamic dribbler, offensive player, ball handler, shooter, shot creator at all. Like, there's there's almost nothing to work with offensively other than just the height, the fact that he looks like an NBA right. player. He's really, really raw on that end. So there's going to be a lot of tinkering. But if you're just looking for a big body who can defend multiple positions, then yeah, Jabari Walker's a nice player. He's one of these guys, I think, that's not even in the mix in the first round. I would be shocked if he was taken in the first round. Seems like to me he could be a second round guy if you, but could right. also go undrafted if he's trying to avoid a two-way contract too. But he's going to need some time in the G League to polish up the offensive side of his game.
I'm just not sure what the fit is for Miami. Like, I think they can get the most defensively out of almost any player. So the fact that they would, you know, again, spend money to acquire a second round pick on what is almost exclusively a defensive specialist doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. Even internally, they had belief that KZ Opala would continue to grow offensively. They saw enough there from a talent perspective mm-hmm. that he would take the leap. It never happened. So that was a faux pas on their part. But I don't know that they're willing to, again, you know, yeah. now knowing what this roster is like, what they're like moving forward, they want somebody a little bit more versatile on both sides of the ball. I don't know that he's the right fit for Miami, but I've been wrong before. I didn't see the Okpala pick coming either. Neither of us predicted that one, and yet it happened. Again, they were high on him until they weren't, and obviously they wound up trading him yeah. to the Oklahoma City Thunder. We'll talk about a few potential sleepers that might slip to Miami or, again, might even wind up being undrafted in the next segment. But before we do that, just wanted to remind you that BetOnline.net continues to be your number one source for all of your betting needs and sports info. You can find all the latest sports developments, league reviews and news, including this year's NHL playoffs and Major League Baseball. BetOnline is your continued source for all of your sporting wagering information, including live betting, esports, and scores. And BetOnline.net remains the best spot for all of your sports scores, podcasts, news this season. BetOnline.net is the fastest and easiest way to check on all of your favorite sports and events, including MMA, boxing, and golf. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends in action. BetOnline, where the game starts. Thanks for making Locked On Heat your first listen every day. Just a reminder that you can always reach us via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskLHeat. Be sure to please subscribe to the show and leave a review. We're opening up the mailbag right before the draft and the start of free agency. So we've got a couple more questions about the upcoming draft. And this one comes in from Ricky. He asks, Wes, who is your favorite prospect in the draft that others might not be high on? The potential yeah. sleeper here. Anybody else that you see fits the bill that maybe somebody just doesn't quite like?
Yeah, frequent listeners of the show will know how high I am on Christian Coloco, the center out of Arizona.
Who? I'm not sure I'm familiar with him.
The guy you hate, David, remember Christian Coloco? Avoiding the Coloco thing just because we've been there already. Again, Rafael Barlow brought up a great name on yesterday's show in the first segment, Peyton Watson, the forward out of UCLA.
Yeah.
I didn't really do much work on him, being honest, until Rafael brought him up, and I was looking at some of the film on him this morning. I really like him. I think he could be a steal at the end of the first round, and it sounds like he's gaining momentum from league insiders. Like, he's gaining momentum as maybe even a late first-round type of guy. He was a highly heralded recruit out of high school, really athletic, a lot of things to like. You talk about a poor man's Herb Jones and Jabari Walker. Peyton Watson's like a rich man's Herb Jones, okay? And not to turn the show into comparing a bunch of players into Herb Jones, but there's enough, unlike Jabari Walker, where I think you made a really good point. Like, you want something there offensively to make your investment worth it, right? How many, like, there's so many just long guys who project as good defenders coming in and out of the league all the time. You want the offense is still today the most important part of the game today is putting up points. And with Peyton Watson, there's enough there that you could project forward. He made threes at a really good clip at UCLA last year. You watch the interviews with him. He's working on his mid-range game. He's working all... You listen to him talking, he's working on the right things. And then and athletically, there's so much to like there. He projects as a good finisher and all these things. And I think that he could be somebody that a lot of people are looking at as a second round grade, but could sneak his way into the end of the first round. And then one other guy that I'll bring up, because we haven't really talked about him a whole lot, is Wendell Moore out of Duke, the wing. 6'5" with a 7-foot wingspan. I think he's an NBA-ready defender right away. Quick hands. He's going to jump a lot of passing lanes. He's good in transition. He's good at just poking the ball out from ball handlers, not even like loose balls, but just kind of with those wraparound quick hands, like poke out of the back of the off, the ball handler. He's able to create things and be disruptive on that end, as well as defend with his chest, defend in close quarters, and execute switching schemes, fight over screens really well. And you could just sort of just picture him on an NBA defense right away, including a high-level NBA defense like Miami's. And then offensively, again, he can knock down shots. There's probably not a ton there offensively to work with. He's not going to be, you know, a number one or even a number two. But as a guy who could space the floor and knock down open threes, he's a smart cutter. There's a lot to like there.
Yeah, no, I can see all those points. I agree with you on all those players. You know, there was the name that Raphael mentioned in yesterday's episode, which you should totally check out. I mean, yeah. I know just in listening to the current state of Heat Twitter, which is never the most accurate gauge for any fan base, but I think it's a representative of a very loud minority. The draft isn't overly concerning, right? Because, you know, like me, I have come to kind of distance myself from the draft over years of covering and following this team. It's like they don't tend to really emphasize draft picks. And then all of a sudden they do select a Tyler Hero who you've never heard of or a Bam Adebayo that you've never heard of. And then, you know, wait and see. Obviously, these players wind up panning out and becoming hugely productive. But, you know, you have to trust that Miami knows what they're doing. Now, Raphael brought up a name. Yes.
Like, the NBA people really respect what the Miami Heat do in the first round. If the Heat takes somebody, like, look at the last few picks that they've had. For the most part, they pan out. Everybody talks about the first round even as a crapshoot. For the Heat, it really hasn't. Like, in the first round, they've gotten really good players. Outside of Justice Winslow and the Kaze Akpala thing, like, that's a really but even with those two guys, that's a small fail rate. Right. That is a really small fail rate compared to other NBA front offices.
So Raphael mentioned Ibu Baji, a Senegalese player who's played overseas, 7'1", just, you know, solid physical, you know, specimen, and just a guy who can really, you know, he has the physical tools to take it to the next level. He's a little raw, but he's kind of that center position that you're looking to shore up, or, you know, if you're looking for a backup or maybe even potentially somebody who can play alongside Bam Adebayo. He's one of those names to
Christian Coloco, know, too, David. Don't forget Christian Coloco.
I've heard of him, but I'm not a big fan of this guy. You know, I like Marjan Beauchamp. We haven't really talked about him in our Blue Notebook series, but I just the way just his journey, the fact that he was almost out of basketball, that he had to just he's come to the realization that this is what he wants to do. Like, he's the inverse of those guys that kind of scare off teams, right? Because it's like, oh, well, why did he have doubts in the first place? It's like, I don't care that he had doubts. What I'm focused on is the fact that he had doubts and he said, you know what? That doesn't matter. I want to do this. This is where I want to be. And he wants to succeed at the NBA level. So I'm a little higher on him than most, perhaps.
I like him too.
But also,
Before we move off of Beauchamp, like, you just watch him run. Sometimes it's as simple as that. He is so fluid. He is such a smooth athlete, and he's long, right? 6'6 with a 7'1 wingspan, and he runs the floor like a gazelle. He's awesome in transition. He knows when to cut to the basket. He knows when to flare out to the three-point line. He's smart. He thinks the game a lot, and I think that that's probably the mechanical part of his game that needs some shoring up, but he's thinking the game, and he's got good intentions, which is half the battle. He's really young. Like, as long as he's thinking the game, eventually that stuff will become second nature, and you could really see him blossom, I think, 3 or 4 years down the road. But immediately, he defends really, really well at a high level with that wingspan, so he can make an impact right away. And based on his career, his numbers at the Ignite from three-point range weren't good, but you look at his career numbers in high school and JUCO, like, the three-point numbers were a lot better. So there's something to like there,
Yeah, and you know, somebody else that we've talked about before on the show, E.J. Liddell, obviously, we're both pretty high on him. I think he's just going to translate right away into a scoring potential, you know, guy who can play the five at some points, play the four. He's got the effort, the dedication, the work ethic, all the things that Miami's looking for in a key player, especially with the potential free agency of P.J. Tucker. He's opted out of his contract. We don't know what's going to happen with him. While he'd like to be in Miami, he's also like that long-term security of being able to have a 3-4 year deal at this point of his career, which seems unlikely, but yet here he is. And so knowing that maybe your future with PJ is a little tenuous, Maybe if you can somehow find Liddell at 27 pick, or maybe if you can trade up in the draft and acquire him, I think he's worth the gamble there. But
well, if the Heat, it's a really good point by you. And if the Heat end up, look, I think there was always potential for the Heat to look for a PJ Tucker backup, just because Markieff Morris is also a free agent. They didn't really have that player last year. Caleb Martin was kind of playing out of position there. By the way, the Heat have extended his qualifying offer, making him a restricted free agent. That was reported today. Yeah. But even like EJ Liddell, who might not be there, but like the Heat, like Jake LaRavia out of Wake Forest, he could fill that backup four position, like kind of like a Kyle Anderson type, right? Justin Lewis out of Marquette. Like if the Heat feel that if their intel on PJ Tucker is that he could leave, that could bump a guy like Justin Lewis or Caleb Houston out of Michigan or some of these other guys up their draft board, right? If they feel like they're going to need to replace that guy a little bit later, especially a guy like Jake LaRavia. Absolutely. Who's kind of that NBA ready now, who might not have a ton of upside, but feels like he can make some sort of impact right away as a rookie. They could telegraph quite a bit potentially here at 27.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. A move is going to be made. We don't know what it is. Nobody does. And yet there's a lot of potential there, obviously. This is the exciting part of the draft, and yet you don't have to lose 50 games a year just to get here. So that's the inverse of what other teams are doing right now. But we'll move on away from the draft. Yeah. From this question, kind of tying into what we were just talking about from probably butchering this, Vietese, he or she writes in, I do like PJ on the Heat, but I really hope we don't overpay. That's an interesting comment, not necessarily a question there. But, regarding PJ Tucker, what would you consider an overpay?
Well, they Again, can't
I just
overpay.
Mentioned it. I don't.
They can't. The only because they don't have full bird rights, they only have early bird rights. Sure. So the most that they could do is give him $1 million more. Like, he's not getting, like, even if the Heat wanted to give him the full mid-level exception of $10 million, they can't. Under NBA rules, they can't. We don't need to explain the entire CBA, but just at the end of the day, that's what they can do, is get up to $8.4 million. And I don't even think the person in this comment would consider a $1 million raise, based on PJ's performance last year, an overpay. It would not be an overpay. So
what about the length of contract, though? Like, that's my concern. It's like, he's 37. We saw him break
the windows.
You think
now
he's going to be productive? You think he's going to be PJ Tucker, this level of PJ Tucker for the next three seasons?
Nope. But if you're able to be competitive and compete potentially for a title for the next year or two, and you have to eat a tough contract at the end of this, then yeah, it's worth it. I don't care. And I don't think the Heat care either.
So 3 years, what, 20 million? You think that's fair?
Right?
27
is that what the math
million,
is? I'm bad at math. You know that. 8.
Is it 8?
Call it 8 times 3. Like, 24 million. Something like that. Yeah.
24. 3 year, 24. Well, I mean, that feels like a slight overpay, but I guess to your point, you can probably always eat the cost. And who knows what happens down the road for now.
Maybe make the last, maybe Jimmy make the happy. Third year, partially guaranteed.
Team option.
Or a team option or something like that. I could see that being the compromise here. Potentially.
Yeah, that makes sense. This one comes in from that one guy. I know who that is. Could Depot be included in a sign and trade with Duncan Robinson for someone? Yeah. Or what are those rules like?
Well, this actually takes a little bit longer to explain. So maybe we should get to our break and then come back at this on the other end.
Oh, that's what's called a tease, ladies and gentlemen. We'll answer more of these questions about free agency in the next segment. But before we do that, I want to talk about one of Wes's favorite snacks from Built Bar, the new Mud Pie Built Bar. It's great. We just had them shipped, I think it's last week. Delicious flavor. What do you like about it, Wes, in comparison to some of the other Built Bar flavors?
So this is one of the Built Bar Puffs flavors. And if you have not tried any of the Puffs flavors, do it. It's different than the other Built Bars. You know, I'm a big fan of all the Built Bar products. I really am. But we have gotten comments that that original Built Bar is a little too sweet or even dense for some people. Mm-hmm. And if you tried the Built Bars and that's your opinion of the Built Bar, then just give the Built Bar Puffs a shot. Like I said, I like all the products. My fiance is not a big fan of the regular Built Bars, but she loves the Puffs. Really? We had the birthday cake one as well. Like, both of those flavors are really good. They're not as sweet. They're a little bit lighter, fluffier. But comes with all with that great packed with flavor profile that the other Built Bars also have. And they're just a little bit easier to eat, not as dense, not as filling, and just a really great snack. Where I was using the other Built Bars as meals sometimes. This is just sort of like a midday snack when I'm a little hungry, or even just right after a workout to get a little punch of protein in. And these are delicious. They're absolutely delicious.
Yeah. And again, they fit all kinds of different diets. They provide all the nutrients you're looking for. And again, you feel like you are indulging in a delicious treat, but in fact, you're getting all the nutrients you might be looking for out of a protein bar. So go to built.com right now. Use the promo code LOCKED15 and you'll get 15% off your order. Use the promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off your order at built.com. The first picks of the Ultimate NBA Mock Draft have been made. Search now for the Ultimate NBA Mock Draft and get over 50 insiders, the Odyssey sports experts, and the draft experts of the Locked On NBA Big Board, including Rafael Barlow. The 5-episode Ultimate NBA Mock Draft is underway. Make Ultimate NBA Mock Draft your second listen today. We're kicking off our mailbag here. We're answering questions about the draft as we did earlier, and now launching into some heavy discussions about free agency. And the question that we had before the break comes in from that one guy. He asked, could Depot be included on a sign and trade for with Duncan Robinson for someone else? What are those rules like?
Yeah, so this is
the short answer.
The short answer is yes, that Victor Oladipo can be included in a sign and trade, and that the Heat are able to execute that. And I think this has been an under talked about part of what Miami's offseason could look like. I've said all along, I think that the Heat should be willing to offer Victor Oladipo something above market price, something like in the $15 million a year range for 2 or 3 years,
yeah.
Just because they have his bird rights, they could pay him anything up to the max, and it's a really easy way to sort of create a new cap slot, a new max cap. Look at the Golden State Warriors, what they were able to do when they flipped Kevin Durant for D'Angelo Russell. What they were doing was not really getting D'Angelo Russell, it was maintaining a max cap slot, and then of course that became Andrew Wiggins, who was a huge part in them winning the title this year. It's also a big reason why they have the biggest payroll in the NBA. But the Heat have ducked the luxury tax for the last couple of years. They're not in danger of the repeater tax. And if I were them, like, hey, if you really want to make the most of this window, and I understand Carnival Cruise Lines has not been doing great for Mickey Arison and that family, but if you really want to try to win a championship during Jimmy Butler's window, it's time to pay off the tax, right? And I'm sick of hearing any excuses about it. Like, you own an NBA team, and what this team is worth now versus when Mickey Arison first bought it, it's not even close.
Yeah.
So it's time to pay up the tax. You came within a shot of making the NBA Finals. You got to go all in to improve this team. And I think a part of that would be bringing Oladipo back, maybe seeing what you get out of him with a full year and a full offseason for him to train and everything and be part of the system. But also, potentially, you can move him in a sign-and-trade deal as well, or trade him at the deadline. But in regards to the sign-and-trade kind of thing, that really opens up interesting possibilities, too. It would hard cap Miami at about $155 million for a payroll. Now, the Heat, even though I think they need to pay, that would still be over the luxury tax by about $6 million. The luxury tax is at $149 projected. The hard cap would be at $155. Right now, they're a little bit less than $130 in total payroll. So there's still quite a bit of room there. You could go out and get a Bradley Beal still and fit him under that hard cap if you really wanted to. I think that's possible. The only problem is that it does hard cap you. So if there's other moves that you want to make in addition to signing and trading Victor Oladipo to another team, then that limits you a little bit from that point. It doesn't mean you can't do it. It just means that if you were going to sign and trade Victor Oladipo for a player, that player that you're getting back in that sign and trade would have to be worth the hard cap, right? So you're not going to do it for some sort of role player. You're doing it for that quote unquote whale type, or maybe a notch below that, a high level player, if not an all-star. That's what I think it would be worth.
Well, we'll be talking about a whale in a second, but two quick points. One, I'm just glad we cover a team with Andy Ellisberg on there, because you know that he's going to somehow be a creative genius when it comes to perhaps the most boring aspect of the NBA, which is fudging the numbers and trying to get just the right player and get them under contract and everything else like that. He is absolutely a savant when it comes to that. He's just incredible.
Got Jimmy Butler with $2 million in cap space. Still makes no sense.
Exactly. And then secondly, you talked about the value of the team from Mickey Arison when he first bought the group. And as a total aside from everything, just wanted to say I just finished Blood in the Garden by Chris Herring over at Sports Illustrated. Fantastic book. And just for somebody who fell in love with the game of basketball during that particular era, seeing how Pat Riley just Riley is absolutely effing nuts. Let me just put it that way. And just everything that happened with that Knicks team, his decision to leave the group, his choices when he came to Miami, just the details that Harry includes, a must read for any Heat player. Like, it's not that he goes into the details about the matchup between Alonzo Mourning and Patrick Ewing and those incredible playoff battles, but just that aspect of itself, like the taking away Pat Riley from the Knicks and Pat's just his requests and his demands to join the Miami Heat, a must read. Like, I found him very, very fascinating. Riley is absolutely insane, but that's why we love it. That's why he's been such a great fit for Miami. Having said that, what are the chances that Pat Riley could sign a whale? That question comes from Alex. None, I'd say.
Really?
He's not going to sign anybody. First,
we'll rephrase the question for Alex. Acquire instead of sign, because I think that's probably what he meant.
Sorry if I was being petty and you know specific on my wording there. Having said that, I still don't see a clear-cut path to bringing in a whale. Like, I know that somehow Andy can pull it off. I know that Pat's very convincing and charming and everything else. Certainly a lot of players want to play alongside Jimmy and Bam. At least I still think that's the case. You've got to find a right guy who wants to buy into what Miami is selling. That's a little tougher. You got that last year with Kyle Lowry. He wasn't a whale, but he was the number one rated point guard prospect. A lot of teams were after Kyle Lowry. For all the complaints from Heat fans about what he was this season and what he's like as a player and he wasn't available and everything else. I mean, ask Dallas whether if they wanted him or not. And they made it to the Western Conference Finals. The New Orleans Pelicans really wanted him. A number of teams, Chicago, et cetera. There was a lot of groups out there that wanted him. So I as far as being able to acquire a whale, I don't know. I'd say 20% chance is where I'd put it at right now. I think, as we talked about in yesterday's show, right now, I think the better bet is to kind of strengthen this group on the outside and the fringes, you know, make those moves for not a star, not a whale, but a second tier kind of player, an impactful role player that can take you to that next level.
Mostly because we don't know that that whale is going to be even available, right? Donovan Mitchell is the name bandied about Heat Twitter all the time. All indications are that Utah is holding on to him at least for a year. And then, by the way, if that's the case, do you want to kind of take all of your assets and go all in on somebody that you think is less than Donovan Mitchell? I don't know who that player is, but just hypothetically. And then Donovan Mitchell becomes available a year from now, and now you've got no draft picks. You got nothing left to try to make that trade. That'll be a tough spot to be in if you're the Heat, right? Especially if Donovan Mitchell's like, hey, I really want to come to Miami. And Utah's like, well, they don't have anything that we want, you know? So there's an opportunity cost to think about, right? It's not just, hey, go get somebody at all costs. There is an opportunity cost. Depending on who you ask, the Kyrie Irving situation, a lot of people think that it's just him positioning a better contract, but ultimately he's destined to end up back in Brooklyn. And there's other people who take it a little bit more seriously, that he could be on the outs. We covered that earlier this week about what his potential fit would be like. But we don't really know what his availability is point blank. Bradley Beal, ditto. You know, he's in the same situation. He can opt out and become a free agent and potentially maneuver a sign-and-trade to wherever he wants to go. And presumably, because of the links between him and Miami for years, the Heat would be on his short list, but we don't know if that's going to happen either. So I would probably go with you somewhere around 20% of the Heat acquiring a whale, just not because of any lack of want to. We just don't really know if that player is available right now. Zach LaVine, it's all insiders are indicating that he's going back to Chicago. D'Angelo Russell is out there as a trade chip. That doesn't like ring whale to me, David.
He doesn't really fit the bill.
It doesn't really fit what the Heat are looking for, I don't think.
John Collins isn't a whale.
Not quite, right? He's a nice player. But then again, like that's a perfect example. I like John Collins. I think he'd be a great fit next to Bam Adebayo. But do you want to trade what it would take to get John Collins? And we don't know what it would, but presumably multiple draft picks in addition to whatever else. Would you want to trade all that for John Collins? And then a year from now, Donovan Mitchell becomes available. And now you're like, well, what happened to all those draft picks that we had? Oh, we moved it all for John Collins. And I don't think Utah would be totally excited about John Collins for Donovan Mitchell. That doesn't seem like the rebuild that they'd want to initiate. So there's an opportunity cost to consider here.
Duncan Robinson, the 27th pick, Omer Yurtseven, and a future heavily protected pick for John Collins. You pull that trade off?
So what, two first-rounders?
Two first round, this one and an upcoming one.
That's tough for me.
Duncan.
That's tough for me.
Duncan and
Because now
Omer.
You're looking at one first round pick that you have available to trade. And maybe by next summer you would unlock another one. As long as you traded the 2028 pick and not the 2029 pick, you could potentially unlock another one. But Or you could have basically three or four first round picks that you could move in a Donovan Mitchell deal instead of two.
With PJ looking at greener pastures, or at least bigger pastures, longer term pastures, I think you need to do something now. And I mean, we saw what happened with Bam during the injury. You can afford to bring back Dwayne Dedman then. You can also shore it up. You know, you won't be able to shore it up with the draft, but you start looking at maybe one of those tweeners that we talked about as sleepers, that could potentially fall out of the draft. So I think there's options. You've got to start looking ahead to a PJ Tucker replacement. And I think
whether or not he's back or not, I agree with you. I don't know if John Collins is that answer, but certainly you got to start going down and start looking. PJ Washington is another name that's been reported that Charlotte could be looking to trade. That makes a lot of sense if you're Miami. I don't know, again, what it would cost. I have no idea what they value PJ Washington at, but you got to start looking at names, I think, if you're the Heat.
All right. Well, I think we've done enough. We've covered enough of the questions today. We've got some more questions about some other potential free agents that we'll tackle in a future episode, but that'll wrap it up for today. Thanks again for making Locked On Heat your first listen. And remember, we're going to continue to cover every aspect of the Heat offseason, from the draft to the start of free agency to summer league. We'll be there providing the coverage that you've come to expect. So make sure to subscribe to the show on YouTube or wherever you get podcasts, or on multiple platforms. We'd love to be able to reach you wherever it's best for you. We've gotten a lot of information about what it takes for you to enjoy the show, to bring the best out of the show. We're constantly making changes. We love hearing from you. So thanks so much for sticking with us throughout the offseason. That'll do it for today. I'm David Ramil signing off. Thanks so much for joining me, Wes.
Wrap it up, yeah.